Welcome to the Confluence Investment Management Biweekly Geopolitical Report for August 11th, 2025. I'm Phil Adler. The race between the United States and China for military superiority might be a lot more complicated and worrisome than the headline numbers suggest. Confluence Chief Market Strategist Patrick Fearon-Hernandez joins us today with an update on U.S. and Chinese defense spending and why it matters for investors. Patrick, in your report, you compare the two countries on the basis of what is termed defense economics. What do you mean by defense economics?
Well, hi, Phil. Thanks for having me on the show. And I appreciate your question, since a lot of the listeners have probably never heard the term. Defense economics is the branch of the dismal science that examines the interplay between a country's military effort and its economy. It looks at how the country's economic characteristics affect what it can do in terms of its armed forces, and also how the investment in the armed forces and the operations of the armed forces affect the economy. You used to hear a lot about it during the Cold War, when both the U.S. and the Soviet Union were building up enormous militaries and eating up a lot of economic resources. Then, after the Cold War ended and the supposedly peaceful period of globalization started, people didn't need to think about that much of defense economics anymore. But now that the U.S. is back in great power competition, this time with China, issues of defense economics are quite important again.
Now, an accepted way to measure a country's overall economy is by gross domestic product, which appears to give the United States a clear lead over China. Do GDP numbers present an accurate picture?
Well, actually, comparing the U.S. economy to another country's economy using GDP is more complicated than you might think. Most countries naturally calculate their GDP in their own currency. The U.S. calculates its GDP in dollars, and China calculates its GDP in yuan, or renminbi. To compare the size of China's GDP to that of the U.S. for any given year, the most straightforward method is to translate Chinese GDP into dollars using the average dollar renminbi exchange rate for the year. Using this method, China's GDP last year was valued at about $18.7 trillion, well below the U.S.'s GDP of $29.2 trillion. However, because of differing economic structures, efficiencies, and price distortions, that $18.7 trillion doesn't necessarily capture the true purchasing power of China's economy. To capture that, economists also calculate other countries' GDP using purchasing power parity, or PPP. This method attempts to adjust the foreign GDP for the purchasing power of the currency, and it can make a big difference. Remember that from the simplistic nominal perspective, China's economy ranked second in the world behind the U.S. at only about two-thirds of U.S. GDP. The International Monetary Fund's respected PPP adjustment puts China's GDP in 2024 at $38.2 trillion. So from the perspective of PPP, China's economy is the biggest in the world, almost one-third bigger than the U.S.'s. That's important for defense economics because it suggests that China's output could potentially buy much more military goods and services than the U.S. could.
Patrick, how do the two countries compare on the basis of GDP growth?
When it comes to growth, we suspect that people already understand that the Chinese economy has grown faster than the U.S. economy for many, many years. Of course, Chinese economic statistics are widely believed to overstate the size of the economy and how fast it's growing. But analysts who try to come up with an independent estimate of Chinese growth still find that it's outpacing the U.S. For example, we note that Chinese GDP appears to have grown at an average annual rate of about 5.8% over the last decade, while U.S. GDP has grown at a rate of about 2.5%. For defense economics, this means that China could easily increase its annual military budget faster than the U.S. could.
These numbers aren't sounding very good so far, Patrick. How do the two countries compare on the basis of current defense budgets?
Now, here's where the story gets really complicated. First, it's common for countries to fund some of their military activities outside the official budget of their military department or defense ministry. So, for comparisons across countries, we like to use the data from the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, or SIPRI, which uses a consistent methodology to estimate total defense spending. SIPRI estimates that total U.S. defense spending last year was $997.3 billion, or more than three times Chinese defense spending of $313.7 billion. But as I'm sure we'll discuss later, the Chinese figure is probably still an undercount.
Yes, I do want to get to that point a little bit later, but first this question. A too narrow focus on total defense budgets ignores whether defense strategies are efficient and potent. How do the two countries compare in the area of strategy efficiencies?
Well, that's a good point. Importantly, while we think China would eventually like to displace the U.S. as the world's most dominant country, with the ability to protect Chinese interests anywhere in the world, right now its defense sphere is mostly just in its own region. Let's call it the eastern half of the Northern Hemisphere. In contrast, as the reigning global hegemon, the U.S.'s defense sphere is basically the whole world. Let's exclude Antarctica, which is nominally neutral. Now, if you take SIPRI's estimate of U.S. and Chinese defense spending last year and divide them by the square mileage of their defense spheres, China is actually spending much more on a per square mile basis than the U.S. is. That reflects China's current strategy of anti-access area denial, under which it's concentrating its military investment in the Western Pacific to deter the U.S. and its allies from intervening in any crisis surrounding Taiwan.
Patrick, we in the United States may be somewhat comforted by reports of China's economic problems, including overcapacity, sinking property values. But what you're looking at here, in part, is the potential for growth in defense spending. Why might the Chinese economy be better positioned for this growth?
Yes, this was one of the eye-opening aspects of our research. Even though China's total defense spending is much bigger than its official defense budget, and it probably faces modestly less severe fiscal constraints to increase it further, we found that the price distortions and subsidies arising from China's excess industrial capacity and civil military fusion programs means that it could ramp up its defense effort dramatically with relatively low resource trade-offs, while the U.S. is already essentially producing at maximum capacity. This is radically different from the situation right before World War II, when the Great Depression had left U.S. industry with copious excess capacity available for military mobilization, while Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan were already producing for war and had much less surge capacity to work with. Now, as shown by the U.S.'s difficulty in ramping up weapons production to offset what it has provided to Ukraine for its war against Russia, the U.S. would face much more difficult political, economic, and fiscal constraints if it wanted to rapidly rearm and deter Chinese aggression in the Western Pacific. Our analysis here suggests China would be well-placed to respond to any U.S. challenge by further boosting its military spending.
So what we perceive as a weakness in China's economy, manufacturing overcapacity, is actually a huge strength if the country is contemplating major increases in defense spending.
Exactly. And importantly, we don't know of any other authoritative economists or analysts who have noted this risk.
Well, let's get back to the possibility of inaccurate calculations when it comes to defense spending. Some of the numbers you use to make judgments in your comparison come out of China directly. Do you think these numbers may indeed hide the actual size of China's defense commitment?
Yes, and as we discussed in the article, it's increasingly accepted that China has adopted the Soviet Union's practice of hiding defense spending in ostensibly civilian budget accounts and off budget. The Central Intelligence Agency and various think tanks have therefore developed their own independent estimates of China's actual defense spending. As I noted in discussing CPRI's analysis, part of that effort involves identifying China's hidden or off-budget defense spending. But then you also have to adjust for the purchasing power of the renminbi, as we discussed earlier. Once you make all those adjustments, it looks like China's total defense spending last year was between 85% and 100% of U.S. defense spending, but mostly concentrated on the Western Pacific region.
I guess all of this suggests that the United States is becoming less able to exert control over world events. It's no longer even clear if we aspire to fill the role of the star player on the international field. How is this reflected in Confluence Investment Management investment recommendations?
Right. It keeps alive the risk that the U.S. will eventually decide to give up trying to defend its role as the global hegemon and hand the keys over to the Chinese. But even if that doesn't happen, the world in the coming years is likely to look much more chaotic and tension-filled than we got used to in the three decades following the Cold War. The world looks set to continue fracturing into relatively separate geopolitical and economic spheres, leading to relatively higher and more volatile consumer price inflation and interest rates. The analysis therefore confirms our long-standing view that investors will get their best returns from equities and commodities, especially precious metals. Now that the dollar is weakening, foreign stocks may outperform. Within the U.S. stock market, we still like the dividend-paying value stocks of big, well-run companies, although we currently have a neutral view between value and growth, based on the way that increased index investing and other factors have been supporting that sector of the market, despite the high valuations of large-cap growth stocks. In contrast, we continue to think that fixed income investments will be challenged in the longer term.
One more question, Patrick. While your long-term recommendations favor defense companies in European markets, AI seems to be a very powerful force sustaining the major technology companies. Where do they fit in your recommendations?
Yes, that's one of the reasons why I noted that we currently maintain a neutral view on growth stocks. To drill down a bit deeper, much of the U.S.-China rivalry centers on technology. And so as the U.S. finds it necessary to ramp up its military capabilities against tough fiscal constraints, it's likely to lean heavily on AI, on quantum computing, and other technologies. That should be especially helpful for technology companies that do defense work and for defense companies that have a lot of technological capability.
Thank you, Patrick. The title of this week's report is Update on U.S. and Chinese Defense Spending, and you can find a link to the written report on the Confluence website, confluenceinvestment.com. Our discussion today is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice, and this information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.